Metaxas Show.
I shouldn't tell you this, but Eric hired someone who sounds just like him to host today's show. But since I'm the announcer, they told me. So I am telling you, don't be fooled.
The real Eric's in jail.
And welcome.
Hey there, folks.
It's true. I'm at NRB. I'm getting an echo here. We are not in our regular studio. We're in Nashville. We have an engineer, Carl, who is trying to work this out. And we'll get there. We'll get there. I have, for 20 minutes, I hope, at least, Joel Rosenberg. Many of you already know Joel Rosenberg. You've probably already read the book that I'm looking at here, even though it came out. When Joel Rosenberg, first of all, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Eric.
You're
great
a big
to be
deal,
with
you're
you.
A big deal author. A lot of my listeners love you. And I want to know, this book, The Kremlin Conspiracy.
March 6th was the release.
So it's out. Okay, so I was just going to say, I know there are people that are such big fans of your work that they've already read the book. So
well, you know, people are busy, so it's possible that there's a few.
There's a handful.
That have not, you know.
I'm only slightly exaggerating. You've got big fans. You crank out these books. They're all good. How, you write, what, a book a year now?
I do. Look, Eric, I don't really know how to do anything else. I'm one of the few Jewish people in America that didn't get the financial gene, right? So I'm not your stock broker, your hedge fund manager,
your
accountant.
You've been cursed with the ability to write great books.
Well,
it's a curse. It's difficult. You struggle with it. Somehow you bear up under the burden. Okay, so Joel.
Well, I tell my journalist friends, look, if you want to write fake news, just become a novelist. That's
right.
That's what it is. There's a job for it. Just own it already.
Okay, so the new book is titled The Kremlin Conspiracy, almost as though it had been ripped from the headlines. Many of your books are like that, Joel. It's kind of wild. Even when you don't intend it, you kind of write almost prophetically because you're so tapped into what's happening that you're kind of, you end up predicting what's happening.
Well, I'm trying to write worst-case scenarios. The theme of I think, most of my novels at the core is this. To misunderstand the nature and threat of evil is to risk getting blindsided by it, right? We were blindsided on December 7th, 1941, because we didn't understand what the Imperial Japanese really wanted to do and what they, how far they'd go to do it. We were blindsided when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, blindsided on September 11th, 2001, not because these situations were unknowable, but because we couldn't imagine it at our leadership level that someone would actually do these things based on the data that we had. It just was outside of our scope. What a novelist can do is track with what's happening in the real world and then project forward. In the Pentagon, they call it war gaming.
Yeah.
I call it being a novelist, I can take you into a world that isn't, and I'd hope it never is, but could be.
Okay. So what can you tell us about this book without giving it away entirely?
Yeah. So. There's a czar rising in Russia. There's a tyrant, an evil dictator, who's emerging in Russia.
Does his name rhyme with Putin?
It does not. He's not Putin, but let's call him Putin-esque. I didn't want to make it directly Putin, certainly not by name.
Right.
Why? Because I don't want people to get tripped up. I think there's a lot of politics right now. People hear the word Putin and they think, wait, do you believe that Trump is a colluder or not?
Right.
And that's not the point of the novel. The point of the novel is that you've got evil rising in, not just in radical Islam, you've got it rising in Moscow right now.
Right.
Now, the question is this. In the novel, the dictator in Russia is preparing to attack the NATO, specifically three countries, the Baltic states. Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. Now, most Americans don't know where these are, but they're right on the border of Russia. They were captured by the Soviet Union back in the day. They spent 70 years in Soviet slavery. They've been free now since 1991, 92, and since 2004, they've been NATO allies. So you say, you know, why would a Russian dictator go attack them?
Are they right next to Finland?
They are, right underneath it.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. But they are part of NATO where Finland is not.
Correct. And that is that would be the question. In other words, if there's power rising in the Kremlin, in Russia, why in the world would they attack the Baltic states?
That's right. So the theory of the Russian leader, Luganov, Alexander Luganov is the name in the book, his gamble is if I launch this massive lightning strike and nobody sees it coming, and I grab one, two, or three of the Baltic states in 96 hours, which he could do, then what happens? They are Article 5 countries. What does that mean? That's the NATO Mutual Defense Compact, where if one country is attacked, every country comes to their defense.
So obviously they want to trigger one of two. I'm guessing with you here. They want to trigger a war, an all-out war with NATO, or they want NATO to say it's not worth it, and then the whole idea of it is broken.
Door number two. Right. The gamble is if Russia moves fast, grabs these countries, even one of them, what is NATO going to do? What's Washington going to do?
It totally depends on who the president is. Well, if the president was Obama, we probably would come up with a reason not to do anything. But I would say a more muscular leader would say we have no choice. The red line's been crossed, and we must fight.
One might, but this brings us out of the realm of the Kremlin conspiracy as a novel into President Trump. President Trump, as you know, questioned the purpose of NATO, questioned the validity of NATO, and questioned whether Article 5, this mutual defense pact, was a good thing or not. And now he has changed on that. That's good. But he raised a very unnerving question if you're a country that's right on the Russian border. And that is, well, okay, under Obama, I'm not sure that he would. Do I know whether President Trump would come and help us? Now, to finish off the novel side, the gamble is if an American president doesn't, and NATO won't if the president won't.
Right.
But if NATO and the United States does not come to the rescue of these three small countries, that is the end of NATO. There is no NATO.
Correct.
You can't have anybody else trust you. And if that happens, suddenly you have a leader in Moscow with 7,000 nuclear warheads, the ballistic missiles to deliver them, and everyone is living in abject fear because they've just watched this guy grab one or two or three little countries, and the world said, I'm sorry, we're not going to nuclear war for countries we can't find on a map. This is a nightmare scenario when, right now, as again, shifting out of the Kremlin conspiracy into reality, President Trump has got his hands full with North Korea, Iran, the Islamic State, Al-Qaeda, you know, trade issues.
In other words, there are these wolves prowling around looking for a weak spot and an opportunity. And
so
what
there's one wolf.
It's the Russian wolf, the Russian bear. But the point is that this is real. In other words, what you're playing something out, but right now there are people in the Pentagon doing war games and thinking these things through, thinking that if we signal this over here, it opens up an opportunity over here. Something like this could happen.
It could, and this is what worries me, because on the face of it, you think, Estonia, you're going to write a novel about Estonia or Latvia? I mean, come on, nobody cares about this. Right. I care. My family were Russian. They were Orthodox Jews who lived in Belarus, White Russia, in the city of Minsk, just under the Baltic states.
Right.
And we escaped. My family escaped in 1906 because Tsar Nicholas II, the last Tsar of Russia, was fomenting the pogroms, these horrible anti-Semitic, atrocities that killed 60,000 Jewish people. Jewish people were raped, their houses were burned, their possessions were stolen. So our family got out. They got to the United States. Like any good Jewish family, they set up shop in Brooklyn, which is where my father was born and raised. It's this country, the United States, where we found economic and political freedom. This is where we found spiritual freedom. This is where my father and eventually my mother came to faith in Jesus as Messiah. And that's how I came to faith in Jesus. So we've had this tremendous run of freedom here. But I see evil rising in Putin again. And he gave this incredible speech just recently where this is the most aggressive speech that Putin has given in 17 years in the Kremlin, which is, we have a new breed of nuclear weapons, high speed, that make NATO defenses useless. This was just the other day.
We're going to break. When we come back, we're going to hear the rest of that sentence. This is extraordinary. Folks, I'm talking to Joel Rosenberg. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm in Nashville talking to Joel Rosenberg about his new book, The Kremlin Conspiracy. I tell you, Joel, I mean, this is hardly an original observation, but this is very exciting stuff. I mean, you are, because you're causing people to think, you're dragging us right into the middle of what is going on in the world today. So when you talk about Russia, this is real. This is not fantasy. This is
absolutely real. And this new speech by Putin is the most dangerous speech he gave. He actually showed, this was his State of the Union address, and he showed
when
on
was
large
this?
Streams, it was Thursday of last week.
Okay, so extremely recently.
Yeah. So what you have is, he actually showed these new animation of these new ballistic missiles, and they were heading towards California and Florida. Now, imagine.
Why is he doing that? Can you tell me?
Well, he's got an election coming up.
Okay,
March 18th.
So that's one good reason.
And,
nationalism, we're strong, we're not afraid
exactly,
of anybody. Okay.
But the danger is it just nationalism, rally the flag? Look, the people's lives in Russia are horrible. Men die at 55. Like, that's the lifespan. And a quarter of those die because of alcoholism. The country's dying, literally dying. 3 million fewer Russians today than when Putin took office. Why? They're not emigrating. They're dying. Like, the people aren't having children to replace themselves because there's hopelessness. So, but he can't, he won't, and he could, but he won't make their lives better. But he does invade somebody. He does cause
people
to say,
we've got to... That's what dictators all do. In other words, the real thing to do would be to abdicate their dictatorial role and allow freedom to come in and to promote freedom. In other words, to do all the stuff that we have by God's grace in America, that's what's going to bless people. But they say, no, we're not going to do that, so we're going to double down on whatever works temporarily, nationalism, chest thumping, because we don't really care about the people, but we've got to do something.
That's right. And he actually, Putin gave a speech in 2005 where he said the worst geopolitical catastrophe in the 20th century was the collapse of the Soviet Union. Now, Eric, you and I, knowing history as we do, we might put the Holocaust or World War II as a whole as the worst catastrophe. We might put the death of 3 million in Cambodia, Rwanda. I mean, there's a lot of competitors for the worst catastrophe of the 20th century. The collapse of the evil empire does not rank in the top 1 million. So we thought of it as a positive. He sees it as humiliating because in his heart, he's not a communist. He's a czar. Now, there's certainly the rally the flag, that bloodlust move that is part of the Russian culture. Unfortunately, he plays on it. But there's another risk, and that is that he actually means it. He in his tenure, he has invaded the Republic of Georgia. He still occupies 20%. He has invaded southern Ukraine. He annexed Crimea. He invaded eastern Ukraine. He now has the Donbas region.
Yeah.
He sent troops and forces into Syria to help slaughter Syrians with Bashar al-Assad.
Now, why do you think, I never quite understand Russians do stuff like that.
Well, in this case, because he's a czar, he's an imperialist, he wants to flex those muscles and expand Russian influence and power so people quake in front of him. That's how he sees the world.
Right.
And what you have to understand is, you know, the old phrase, the old line, you give a mouse a cookie, he wants a glass of milk. Nobody's stopping him. He's eaten the whole bag of Oreos, and he's now just stolen the dairy farm. You know, nobody is stopping him. He was trained in the KGB era. He was a KGB operative. He was the head of the FSB, the modern KGB. So he's trained to expect reaction when he takes aggressive action. But no, there is no reaction. And every time he does this, he is not only an imperialist, I would describe him as a mafia boss.
Yeah.
He just happens to have 7,000 nuclear warheads.
Right.
He's not Sonny Corleone. He's not a rash, hot-headed thug.
Uh-huh.
He's Michael. He is a cold-blooded, calculating killer, and nobody's calling his bluff. Nobody's drawing
a line. Well, do you really think that Trump is not calling his bluff? In other words, I think that Trump is crazy like a fox, that he... in other words, if I were Putin or anybody in the world, I'd be much more worried with Trump in the White House than with
Hillary, who's
failed.
Absolutely. No, there's no question. And I would add, and this is actually an element, I didn't really write this with Trump in mind, the Kremlin conspiracy, because nobody expected him to win. So I wasn't writing it for him. But I did create a character in the American president who was new to the presidency, but he had a capacity for change. So President Trump is changing. Look, if you're really a true sellout to Putin, you would not put Jim Mattis in the Pentagon.
Well, exactly.
But you're not going to put Mike Pence next to you. You're not going to put Mike Pompeo at CIA. These are solid men,
right.
and women, Nikki Haley. Moreover, in his policy, so that's personnel, in his policy, he's pushing NATO to spend more money on defense. He's spending more money on defense than ever before. I don't see policy that's caving to Putin, but I have to say, Eric, that while I'm glad about those things, and I don't believe I'm not willing to say there's criminal intent or even corruption, but there's something weird. Let's just admit that there's something weird about the way President Trump talks about Putin. He can be tough on Rocket Man in Pyongyang,
yeah.
On Nancy Pelosi, on Alec Baldwin, I mean,
right.
You name it.
Right.
He doesn't have a problem tweeting out something. But he is so soft in his interaction with
right.
Vladimir Putin that I can't say what it is, and I'm not going to jump to some legal or
well, but I mean, you have to have some ideas.
You're
implying something. What are you implying? It's fine.
I'm not implying. I actually do not know. I mean, but
don't you think that I just think that the reason I say Trump's crazy like a fox is that I think he has ways of negotiating. Sometimes it's to be super tough. Other times it's to be super friendly. He plays with people's heads. I think that's what he has done with Putin.
That is very possible. But take what he's doing with China as an alternative. He was very tough in the campaign on China. He made that first phone call with the leader of Taiwan. That spooked the Chinese. But then he sent a friend of China, Iowa Governor Terry Branstad, who'd known the premier
right,
of
right.
China forever.
Right.
This told us, look, I'm going to be tough on you, but I'll send you a friend as an ambassador,
right.
And that way, if you've got something to say, let's talk. He's not doing that. He sent Tillerson, a friend of Putin.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, again, I'm not talking about corruption.
I know.
I'm just saying a man who can talk to him.
Right.
But he's talking soft and sending a friend. It's not clear to me
right.
with Putin's team attacking and trying, not succeeding, but trying to subvert our democracy. He's invading one country after another. He's helping North Korea. He's helping Iran. He's helping Syria. This is not someone we can do business with. And the question is, when you there's a risk. And
well,
what I've done,
the
in,
idea
what I've
that
done in the novel
your,
is I'm projecting what the risk could be
okay.
if you miscalculate with a man who's a killer.
I would assume that people in the Pentagon and people who affect foreign policy read your books and read books like your books in order to help them think about this stuff.
I hope so. I know some of them that do, and I'm grateful for that. One of the things I do as a novelist and with the Kremlin conspiracy and the others is try to drive the conversation into the popular culture. Yes, I think the experts, there are experts who get this, who know this. And I think that many people around President Trump do. I don't think Michael Flynn did, so I'm not unhappy that he's not there at national security anymore. But
right.
I think that the culture sometimes gets lost in the context of all the Washington political talk. And one of the things that a novel does is not just educate, but my job is to thrill, right? It's a thriller. So my job is to get a tweet from you at 5 o'clock in the morning, 5:30. You're cursing me because you've been up all night reading this thriller. I have to earn it. And if I get a good, hearty curse, now, not from the evangelical audience, you know, and I'm an evangelical
we
myself.
We curse in a sweet way.
Yeah, like, what the heck? But anyway, but Dad and I know I've done my job
yeah.
because I write short, intense chapters. They're kind of like Pringles. You can't eat just one.
Right.
So what I want people to think, you know what, just one more.
That's why my advice to people is do not even pick up a Joel Rosenberg book. That's my advice. I'm warning you, because if you pick it up, you're in trouble. I gave you a warning. If you pick it up, you pick it up at your own risk.
Well, I'd like them to buy it first. Then if they don't read it, that's a separate issue.
You know what I always say? I say, I don't care if people... I don't care if people buy my book. I mean, I don't care if people read my
book. I don't care if people buy your book either.
I just want them to read...
No,
it cuts both ways. It cuts both ways. But, well, we've just got seconds left. This is very exciting. I hope, honestly, Joel, that people in power will read this and it will cause them to think more deeply. And I do love, it's one of the things about living in a free society, is that Americans